ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 26, because we finished 25. But I'm going to go a few verses ahead to verse 4. Fundamental principles of material nature. So, where we ended up yesterday was a further description by Kapila about stage of perfection in bhakti and the fruit of that and its effect on disinterest and liberation, disinterest in attaining the heavenly planets, a dutiful but detached performance of worldly activity while consciousness is purposely absorbed in the personality of Godhead. So, glories of devotional service, that's the title of the chapter. So now, Kapila is going to continue, as he says in the first verse, with different categories of the absolute truth. So the different categories of the absolute truth indicate his energies, or the various tattvas that expand from him, because the absolute truth is the source of everything, and to have a full appreciation and inspiration about fixing the mind upon Krishna, something like what Krishna is asked in the 11th chapter, excuse me, 10th chapter, of Bhagavad Gita. After Krishna discloses the Chaturshloki verses, Arjuna goes, wow, you're the absolute truth. Can you describe various ways in which I can always think of you? And Krishna describes his vibhutis, his opulences. And his opulences are none different than him. Of course, Arjuna Tibeta Beta type of philosophy says there's also a difference in that the energy is not the same as the energetic, but that's the difference part. But the non-difference part is the energy has no existence other than the energetic. So to think of Krishna, always think of Krishna, means to have some appreciation of that which comes from Krishna, which is everything. So he's going to describe, that's the first verse. I'm going to, I can describe to you now the different categories of the absolute truth. And not surprisingly, he starts with material nature. So what's the, this is Sambandh again, what's the relationship between material nature and its source of emanation? So that's what we're going to hear. Text 4. Sa esha prakritim sukshman. So sa esha, that same supreme personality of Godhead, there's a relationship between him and the prakritim sukshman. Sukshman means subtle, or sometimes not so subtle, but its action can be subtle. Daivim Gunamayim Vibhu. Vibhu is Krishna. That's, you know, the greatest of the great, word for word. So he's Vibhu. And from Vibhu comes this Prakritim Sukshman, that Daivim is related to Vishnu, and Gunamayim, it's invested with three modes of material nature. Prakriti, or material nature, looks pretty innocent, but it's, you know, it's got all kinds of features to it, like modes of nature features. You know, studies have been done to indicate how colors affect consciousness. But it's just like, you know, here's a wall. It's, you know, it's pretty innocent. But it's affecting our consciousness. Huh? Even just by color. And so forth. So the modes of nature are active even in dull matter. Not just living entities that are running around in different modes of nature. Yadrichaya. There's that really nice word. Yadrichaya generally is translated as somehow or other. Like how the living entity falls. Yadrichaya. Somehow or other. Or how bhakti begins. Yadrichaya. You know, it's the will of the Supreme Lord. So because he's, however non-visible or apparently remote, everything is acting by his will. So here it's translated as by his own will. Upagatam, obtained. Abhyapadyata, he accepted. Lilaya, as his pastime. So, nice that he, Kapila Dev is describing that the personality of Godhead accepts this interaction with material energy as a lila. We normally think of lila in a different way. Like, you know, Damodar lila, or Govardhan lila, or something. Krishna's wonderful pastimes in Vrindavan. That's lila. Then this other one is another lila. His interaction apparent interaction or remote interaction, causal interaction with Prakriti, Sukshman. So here's the translation. As his pastime, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, the greatest of the great, accepted the subtle material energy. That's Abhyapadyata, he accepted. Okay. It's not like once upon a time he didn't accept and then, oh, I guess I'll accept, and he accepted. It's his energy. It's just a particular feature of how he interacts with that energy, which in Brahma Samhita elaborately is discussed, and here in this chapter is going to be discussed, and in earlier in the third canto and in the second canto it's discussed. The process of creation is being intimated. So the idea is, or not the idea, the event is Mahavishnu is enjoying in Yoga Nidra with his internal potency, Rama Devi. And the material energy, in this case, the state of the material energy is known as Pradhan, the undifferentiated totality of material elements, is in a resting state. It's just there, like a cloud. And then, of course, this is a lila, so we say, and then, as if it's an event in time, but anyway, and then Mahavishnu considers two things. The living entities that are dormant within my transcendental body, I wish for them to experience the fullness of happiness, and they're not experiencing that. They're in this dormant susupti state. He just has that desire. And the second is that distant energy, the shadow of Rama Devi, wishes to have some service. I'd like to give her some service. She has nothing to do. He says, compassion and compassion, because he's compassionate. And that contemplation, through a glance, then begins creation, so you know the steps. So that's the accepted, the subtle material energy event or circumstance. So the purport, in this verse, the word gunamayim is very significant. Daivim, in the verse also, means, quote, the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. Daivim. Now, Daivim Prakritim Ashrita, we know that as the Mahatma takes shelter of the spiritual potency. But here now the reference is Daivim in terms of material potency. So what's going on? Which is it? It's the material potency is a reflection of his internal potency. So depending upon the consciousness of the living entity, it can act this way or that way. It can be binding or it can be liberating. We can utilize the mridanga in Krishna's service, and by so doing it acts in a spiritual way. We can use the tongue, which is a material object, in service to Krishna, and it acts in, to liberate us and our ears, or we can use it in some other way. It's such an important concept that I just expressed that the longest chapter in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam discusses it. If you ever want to use your dictionary a lot, go to chapter 87 of Canto 10, Prayers by the Personified Vedas. Because the question that's being asked in the beginning of the chapter, the whole chapter is answering, is this question. How does something material act spiritually? How can the tongue and the ear... Maharaj Pariksit says, wow, this is amazing. The place that you've taken me to just by this process of hearing is... I'm fearless. I have no... I'm completely fixed in consciousness of the Supreme, but I have a doubt. How did it happen? Because we're just using something material and something material. So how do we get to the spiritual place by that? Shukadeva Goswami said, this is a very good question. It's such an important question. Long, long ago, the sages were discussing this question. And when they were discussing the question, they referred to a prior discussion long, long before that. In other words, it's a classic question. And the personified Vedas and the four Kumaras were having a powwow about this question. And then the unfolding of that discussion is the chapter. And in short, the answer is, everything comes from a source of emanation, Krishna. And when those some things are used in service to Krishna, their spiritual quality is restored. And then they can act spiritually. Like a copper wire becomes electrified and acts like electricity, although it's just copper wire, for example. So things can be spiritualized, or their original spiritual quality can be restored. And that's just about this word, daivim. Daivim means the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It can work this way or that way. And the variable is the regard of the living entity towards the source of emanation. So we have to get that alignment correct of our regard for the source of emanation. That's sambandh again. And gunamayim means, quote, invested with the three modes of material nature. Just in this beginning part, he set the ground for what he's going to say next. I mean, the whole rest of the purport. There's two aspects. In relation to the Supreme Lord, the modes of material nature. Listen carefully. When the material energy of the Supreme Lord appears, not like, it's eternal, just as the Lord is eternal, His energy is eternal, but when it appears, this Gunamayim energy acts as a manifestation of the energies of the three modes of material nature. Semicolon, it acts as a covering. Then next sentence. The energy emanated from the Supreme Personality Godhead manifests in two ways. A, as an emanation from the Supreme Lord, Daivin. And B, as a covering of the Lord's face, Gunamayim. We know this verse from Ishapanishad. Hiranmayina patriya satyasya pihitam mukham. Please remove this dazzling effulgence. In that case, it's the Brahmajyoti, so they can see your mukham. But also the material energy covers, and we'll hear Prabhupada's explanation. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that because the whole world is illusioned by the three modes of material nature, the common conditioned soul, being covered by such energy, cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And to explain, he gives an example. The example of a cloud is very nicely given. All of a sudden, there may appear a big cloud in the sky. I've noticed this especially in tropical climates. The sky is completely clear. And really fast, a cloud forms, and dark, and rain, and then it just is gone. It's really far out. So, all of a sudden, there may appear a big cloud in the sky. This cloud is perceived in two ways. A, to the sun, the cloud is a creation of its energy. And B, but to the ordinary common man in the conditioned state, it is a covering to the eyes. Because of the cloud, the sun cannot be seen. Got the two? No. It is not that the sun is actually covered by the cloud, only the vision of the ordinary being is covered. Similarly, although Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord, who is beyond Maya, the material energy covers the ordinary living entities. Those conditioned souls who are covered are individual living entities, and he from whose energy Maya is created is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is an aspect of the absolute truth. And sambandha, how do his prakritim sukshman relate to him? And it's in two ways. It's his energy, that's one way, under his direction, mayadhyakshena, and then another is its action upon the living entity, covering and deluding and bewildering the living entity. But he's not deluded, he's not under that deluding influence. That's the point. Two different aspects. Second paragraph. In another place, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, 7th chapter, it is stated that Vyasadeva, by his spiritual vision, saw the Supreme Lord and the material energy standing behind him. This indicates that material energy cannot cover the Lord, just as darkness cannot cover the sun. Darkness can cover a jurisdiction which is very insignificant in comparison to that of the sun. Darkness can cover a small cave, but not the open sky. Similarly, the covering capacity of the material energy is limited and cannot act on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is therefore called Vibhu. Isn't it nice? Prabhupada's explanation. And the other one is Anu. That's us. As the appearance of a cloud is accepted by the sun, as the appearance of a cloud is accepted by the sun, the sun creates the cloud by its energy interacting with water and the cloud forms. So this is he's using this language in a clarifying and purposeful way, as the appearance of a cloud is accepted by the sun, so the appearance of the material energy at a certain interval is accepted by the Lord. Very nice. Although his material energy is utilized to create the material world, this does not mean that he is covered by that energy. Those who are covered by the material energy are called conditioned souls. The Lord accepts the material energy for his material pastimes in creation, maintenance, and dissolution, but the conditioned soul is covered. Two different things. Pastime, covered. Daivim, gunamayim. He cannot understand that beyond this material energy, there is the Supreme Personality, Godhead, who is the cause of all causes. Just as a less intelligent person cannot understand that beyond the covering of the clouds, there is bright sunshine. Just as a less intelligent person cannot understand that beyond the covering of the clouds, there is bright sunshine. And so, little appreciation of the structure of Srimad Bhagavatam. In Jiva Goswami's Sandarbhas, he refers to this section of Canto 1, Chapter 7, where Vyasadeva, under the order of Narada, or instruction of Narada, prepares himself to compile Srimad Bhagavatam. The description that precedes that is Vyasadeva is completed compiling all the Vedas, and he's now contemplating how did it come out, and he's feeling despondent, and he's bewildered. What's that feeling? And Narada comes very kindly to indicate, I'm making it brief, to indicate the reason. The reason is you have inordinately described what is true, how living entities through the process of karmakanda can fulfill their material desires. But the problem is that just like authorizes and supports and certifies, yes, go fulfill your material desires. Just do it religiously, that's all. And such persons think, well, it's bona fide. That's it. In fact, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, they think that's all there is. There isn't anything else. There isn't anything beyond that. But we heard in the earlier verses, the devotees understand the absolute truth is the absolute truth. There's nothing beyond that. Just like Bhagavad Gita. Where there remains nothing further to be known by understanding the absolute truth. So their interest is not understanding the absolute truth, their interest is in fulfilling material desires in a religious way. So there's already Narada reasons that living entities already have such a propensity. Now you're just supporting it or endorsing it. And that's okay, it's certainly religious, you haven't done something wrong, but too much. And so you're feeling dissatisfied because you haven't sufficiently glorified the Supreme Lord. So you should compose now one literature that just does that, and there's two things that you should do. Fix your mind in complete trance upon the absolute truth, and then the realization that you experience will be the basis of such a literature, and you just expand upon that realization. So what we're hearing in Canto 3, Chapter 26 is the expansion of Canto 1, Chapter 7. Oh, and throughout the whole of the Bhagavatam, it's an expansion of that. So that section is really important. It's the foundation and basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. It's Sambandh again. And also Abhideya. So, in his Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami, multiple times, something, you know, 4 or 5 or even 6 times, I don't know, I'm not so familiar how many, but many times, he takes those verses and, you know, goes backwards and forwards and inside and out and analyzes them, assesses them, because it's the root of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you want to understand the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, understand those messages very carefully, and then the light goes on. The illumination of what's being said by Kapila to Devahuti becomes clear. So Prabhupada is, in this purport, making reference to these very important verses, Canto 1, Chapter 7, starting with text 4, goes 4 through 7. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak panihate male. That's, he fixed his mind in concentration upon the Supreme Lord. And what did he see? Apashat purusham purnam mayam cha tad apashayam. Maya, the material energy, cha, also, tat, apashrayam, under his full control, he saw. So normally we don't see, it's like, we don't see Krishna because Maya is standing in front of him. But when Krishna says, okay, Maya, stand behind me, then we can see. And we can't otherwise see. Like Devahuti earlier in this third canto says to Kapila Dev, help! Karnamuni just left. And I've been with him for tens of thousands of years, and I'm very attached and just attached to family life, and my mind is reeling, and I know it's the illusory energy, but that illusory energy is your energy because you're the Supreme Lord, so please remove it. Too much. So we're dependent upon the Supreme Lord. To our regard for the Supreme Lord is what determines whether we can see him or see the cloud of material energy only, and not see him and not even acknowledge his presence. Our regard for him is everything. Then the illusory energy can be withdrawn and stand behind him. So then the next verse is also very important. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. So again, the three modes, triguna, has a not only moha but sammoha, very bewildering effect. Very. And you can't stop it. Why? Because it's under the control of the Supreme Lord. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam. The living entity becomes bewildered. Paropi, although he's transcendental, manute, he takes it for granted that anartam, things that are not wanted, are wanted. That's the influence of Maya. Except that which is not to be what is. And we're under the influence of that in the conditioned state. So the translation. Due to his external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. Wow. So, what to do? course, that's Vyasadeva's concern. He compiled the Vedas because of that concern. He's compassionate. What to do? And being a literary person, he started compiling the Vedas. Now it's he's giving us Srimad Bhagavatam. The material miseries, that's the next verse, Anarto Pashamam Sakshat. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of the people don't know this. And therefore, the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So that's the medicine that is meant to address the disease. That is seeing someone again. Spiritual conception of seeing all things in relation to their source of emanation. Even the cloud. One can see the cloud in relation to the source of emanation. Because that's the divium part. The sun creates the cloud. Otherwise, we're just seeing the cloud and not seeing the Supreme Lord behind it. So linking process is to connect with the Absolute Truth and to understand the sambandha, the relationship of this with its source of emanation, and then see it properly and then act properly, utilize it in his service, and then the deluding influence subsides. Yay! From Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtana. And the awakening of that service spirit is most effectively accomplished through chanting of the holy name and side by side hearing of transcendental glories of the Supreme Lord like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. That's our process. And even if we don't know the science of the process, it still works. And by understanding the science of the process, then deeper appreciation of the process, the name, and the chanting of the name, and the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, and hearing with ever greater attention the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, because we appreciate this is the mercy that's being extended to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in this case Vyasadeva and his spiritual master Narada Muni to give us the means of deliverance. That's exactly that phrase is used in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's our means of deliverance in this dark age of Kali by receiving the light of this Bhagavat. And the light of the Bhagavat is both the book and the deliverer of the message of the book, person Bhagavat and the book Bhagavat. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtaki. Very nice. I'm going to end. Any discussion? Yes.
Maharaj, for me, always there has been difficulty in appreciating philosophy. So I could never get attracted to reading aspect.
Okay.
But the way I look at it is like so many different ways are presented in which Krishna is God and how we should serve him and do Krishna. So like for me, like I'm looking at that essence and saying, what is the point? So I'm somehow not getting attracted to that reading or the philosophy aspect of it. When it comes to pastimes, I like reading pastimes. But when it comes to philosophy, it's always difficult for me. I just wanted to ask you like how I could get around, how I could see philosophy also as bhakti.
Okay. Two things. One is spiritual conception. Now, even without a spiritual conception, hearing pastimes, they have their potencies. And the potencies are acting, even if we don't have the proper conception. To get the full benefit, having a proper spiritual conception facilitates or enables the full benefit. So the philosophy part is to help us get the full benefit, or to address the spiritual conception of the pastimes. I'll say the same, that part in a longer way, a little bit longer. Ask Prema Trangati to send you, when she has it completed, and she can send me a copy too, a little PowerPoint presentation that Jai Jagannath put together during our mentors meeting. The title of it is that the primary duty of a mentor is to pass on or transmit someone again. So it's like he studied and contemplated the subject very carefully, and it's scripturally based, but using his type of language. I said this during my visit here already, but I have no problem saying it again and again and 100 times. There's a foundation upon which the movement toward Krishna, the process of bhakti, movement toward Krishna, avideya, acting in our relationship with Krishna, is to be established. We can't do that without the foundation. So sambandha is the foundation, so that we can move toward the goal, toward Krishna. So that which will help us do that is having a clear understanding. In fact, it's the same message of faith, because you've heard it over the weekend. Faith is that seed, Bhakti Lata Bija, mentioned it last night, Bhakti Lata, the seed of the creeper of devotion is faith in these devotional scriptures. And the devotional scriptures certainly are describing the forms of Krishna, the activities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna. But there's also, you know, who is Krishna? Who is this person? And if when we understand more and more and more about the person, wow, it stimulates even more. It gives us the appreciation, these vibhutis of Krishna, like, you know, the 10th chapter. It's like, oh, too many, one thing, the next thing, and what's, let me get to some pastime. It's to help us appreciate the person who is doing the pastime. It's so, it's another way of saying the same thing. It helps us to appreciate. It's just like I mentioned last night also about chanting. Deva Madhava asked that question about the relationship of chanting. If chanting is the process, why do we have lit books and things? Because it's without proper sambandha again, according to Haridas Thakur, chanting isn't going to yield the full effect that it's intended to give. Or that other example was Harikatha, this philosophy, and the pastimes are the Swarup Shakti of the name. Like Radha, how do we approach Krishna without Radha? So we need. So that's another way of saying the same thing. So it's a very different way of saying the same thing. we need proper spiritual conception. So we need to remove the material conceptions. Without removing the material conceptions, hearing pastimes is still going to be beneficial, but not fully effective. We won't get the full benefit. So no harm, but there's the purpose of it. And then our second answer, response to your question, is try this. Because on two other occasions, two devotees said similar thing, and I said, try this. So try this. And they said, wow, it worked. So when you read, read with the spirit that Prabhupada is speaking to me. He wants to give me something. Just like, you know, with your son. You may say something to your son. And he maybe wants to do something else or play or whatever he wants to do. But as his father, there's something important you wish to convey. So like with your son to you, so you to Prabhupada. He wishes to, he wants to give you something. And you're thinking, oh, I want pastimes. Or Vyasadeva, or Shukadeva Goswami. I'm not so interested in this. Please, let's just go to the pastimes. He wants to give you something. So along with, you know, the spinach is important too. Your green leafy vegetables, not just, you know, the sweets. You know, I like the sweets. Okay, that's part of the meal. And so these other things are there too. It's personal. The second part is it's a relationship. It will help establish a relationship with our founder Char. He's not just doing it dutifully because somebody else he has to comment. It's that there's it helps secure our disease. Yeah, go ahead.
What I understood is my impression has always been Samadha Gyan means I am the servitor and Krishna is God and that's about it.
No, there's much more.
But what I'm understanding is there's much more different ways of looking at the same message. And it's important to look at it in all different ways to serve Krishna in a better way.
Yeah, like how is, I mean, like this verse, it's philosophy. Oh, come on, I'm only philosophy. So, the philosophy is, you'll look in any direction and you'll see the material energy. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Now, how do we see that in relation to the Supreme? Well, I'm Krishna's servant and off we go, down the road. But we're still attached to certain parts or aspects of this ubiquitous material energy. It's like a playground, like a child in a sandbox. And it's just a place to play, that's all. And some parts of it more than other parts, etc. The mind conception that flows from the I conception. So, something else? Yes. Yes.
Maharishi, body is dead. So body cannot generate anything spiritual. Mind is also Maya's energy. Now chanting is coming from spirit soul. Harya Sabhas is completely transcendental. Chanting, playing. So my question to you is, when we are chanting, I don't think mind is generating it, the spirit soul is generating it. When I can attentively hear, it works. So, what happens when I attentively hear?
Nice question. But I'd like to do a reset on the premise of your question. The body is dead, but it can be spiritualized. Otherwise, how does chanting attentively happen? Besides the question you asked, what's happening? The mind, the tongue, and the ear, minimally, are becoming spiritually activated, like, you know, electrified, spiritually electrified, so they can transmit the holy name, both vibrating it and hearing it. So what's happening when attentive? It's like, you know, when you stick your fingers in that electric socket over there, you get a shock because there's electricity. Similarly, when we bring the faculty of attention, chaita, cognizance, it's like Prabhupada says, the soul is both conscious and consciousness. So when we direct our consciousness or attentiveness to Krishna and connect, we're connected to Krishna even if we're not attentive, because fundamentally we're spirit soul. And also when chanting, then that connection, so it's certainly much better. But when we direct our attention or faculty of awareness or consciousness and touch Krishna by our consciousness of Him, then something happens. That's something that happens. It's just a direct connect. It's a direct connect, not a bad connect. It's direct. And the potencies of Krishna are directly experienced. And that can unfold into so many other things. The direct experience and even entering into Krishna's pastimes, according to Sri Brahma Samhita, the Svarasaki stage of chanting. Krishna's pastimes are enacted even in this realm, and one participates in them. That's a very advanced stage of attentiveness and chanting. It's a direct, like that Michelangelo painting of God reaching out, and Adam reaching towards God, and so it's just dead matter, but life comes with that.
Maharaj, then we are chanting, trying to focus, but the inattention is there. We are drifting.
Then what happens? Well, it depends what we do about it.
We're trying.
Okay. But so we two things: effort and mercy. When Krishna sees the effort, according to His discretion and His own sweet will, in His own sweet time, because that's His position. He's sweet and He is the master. He can free us from that. We're dependent. That's the realization of one who tries to be attentive. I can't do this on my own. I need mercy. Krishna! So if one cries like that.
We understand, you know, like our spiritual goal should be to progress in bhakti. We understand all of our philosophies and everything related to that.
That's pretty good.
We try to aspire.
Congratulations.
But knowing all those philosophies and at least the outline, the abstract I'm talking about, you know, like we understand at least the core essence, like what we have to do in our life.
Okay.
And what should be our main business.
Okay.
And we also try to aspire, you know, to reach our goals, like, you know, like we set in material standards, okay, this year we have to do this, this year we have to do
fine,
this.
Fine, fine.
In spite of all those things, even though our considering our current position, I may not be able to achieve, but still we have the goals.
Okay, fine.
When we try really literally hard, you know, sometimes, you know, like we feel the process of bhakti is so heavy.
Ooh.
And, you know, like we feel that, you know, like I'm not really qualified to accomplish this task at this particular time.
Okay.
I need maybe some prerequisite which I need to fulfill to accomplish this.
Keep going, then what?
when we feel that heaviness, you know, like sometimes we feel we have to sit back, or else we tend to think, you know, we need a painkiller process instantly for now to, you know, like, we know it's not a thing that, what I'm trying to say is, you know, like, a kind of sense gratification might require at this moment. I cannot take too, it's too heavy for me, you know, like, something like that. And we know we shouldn't do that, but purposefully we try to do that just to, you know, like, subdue the heaviness. So, without compromising on this thing, how to take it forward?
Beautiful question. I had discussion about this very topic recently. Were you here for yesterday morning's discussion?
Yes.
So, in that discussion yesterday morning, we heard in the purport and then explored Jiva Goswami's commentary on Yuktam Vairagya Uchate, Nibandha Krishna Sambandhe, Yuktam Vairagya Uchate. So that the first part is Anasaktasya Vishayan, Yartharham Upayunjitaha, Nirbandha. Nirbandha indicates persistence in practice, and yatharham means as much as possible, upayunjataha. So involvement in matter, proper detachment includes several things. It includes what I recall, so put it in simple language, what's sustainable, what is a standard that for me is sustainable. Let's say, you know, as someone begins chanting, they chant one round or four rounds, or let's say in the case of someone in early days of the Hare Krishna movement, Prabhupada had people that were addicted to smoking cigarettes. And they went to Prabhupada saying, "No, what should I do?" He said, "Smoke one in the morning, one in the evening." And chant during the day. You mean, you know, regulate those things, not binge, because I restrained myself artificially. But recognizing, not with disregard or envy towards the goal, because that's not what you're saying, but one should be careful about that. I understand that I accept and I embrace the goal, but I'm not. So, those things that are otherwise involvements in matter, we discuss, you know, there was this question about recreation. And so, we do those things in such a way, the verse says, we do those things in such a way that they're beneficial to developing devotion. We try to select those things. So it's as much as one can sustain that, you know, the intelligence of selecting things that are beneficial. So there's levity, lightness, along with this, what you call heaviness, but it's wonderful. The heaviness is not heaviness, it brings levity, it lightens the soul, literally, I mean, our physical existence becomes lightened. The burdens become lightened. But you know, our resisting that levity that makes us think I need some levity. I need a break from bhakti. Like it's, you know, it's heavy, so I need a little break. I need a break from my constitutional position for a while. But we can't. It's our constitutional position is our so select those things that are relaxing. And some people, I mean, I know some people that are they're stress and even to the point of depression prone, and they find they get enormous lift just from chanting. If, you know, if they didn't have chanting, they'd be on medication. And some people even are on medication and chanting helps them. But it's recommended. Look towards those things that are, that, using your language, give relief from the heaviness so that you can then just sustain. I may not be able to chant 16 rounds or 64 rounds or something. But so let me do this. And I'm, you know, I may be addicted to cigarette smoking, so I'll try to regulate it. So those things that, you know, that is purposeful. The purpose is that which is going to enhance developing bhakti. And I accept those things as far as possible. The detachment is as far as possible without those things. Or accept those things I do accept for the purpose of spiritual elevation or development of bhakti. And whatever that, you know, sojourn into the material energy, let the spirit behind it be, this will, by accepting these things, my dear Lord Krishna, I'm not sufficiently spiritually strong to do it without these things. Okay? So, it's like, you know, entering into grihastha ashram. The soul doesn't need that. The body may need that. In you know, the social aspect and the physical aspect and the emotional aspect and, you know, those aspects. So let me accept it in a way that's under the umbrella, the protection of religious principle, theistic conduct, as far as possible. There may be some things that are not theistic conduct, like smoking cigarettes or whatever that something else is. And then let me regulate it. Let me accept it with the spirit of not thinking that now I get some relief, but it's helping me to get to the next level. And so that is the next level is the further awakening of bhakti. Let me feed that, the further awakening of bhakti. And meanwhile, I'm not going to beat myself up because this other thing is there. Nor am I going to like think with in jubilation, yay, it's authorized now, I can smoke two cigarettes, one in the morning, one in the evening. But it's something I wish to go beyond. And it's part of my conditioning, so I'll just be honest and accept this is part of my conditioning, and then accept it in this mood that my intention, sankalpa, in doing this is may it help me develop my devotion to Krishna further, not, you know, a break from devotional service. And that will, if there's lots of prayer and lots of, let's say, self-honesty required, because one can easily deceive oneself thinking, you know, thinking in the wrong way. doing worship with a different intention. And that the different intention isn't like you get slapped for it, but it doesn't carry you deeper in the core awakening of the seed of bhakti into the mature, more mature stage. When that more mature stage is there, then darkness is dispelled. Because I want that. I'm not there yet, but I want that. So it's the cultivation of anushilana is the phrase in Rupa Goswami's teaching. We're cultivating. So I'm recognizing where I am. Like just, you know, it's not heavy, it's just my tendency is conditioned tendency is different than bhakti. I'm used to, you know, selfishness, not for Krishna. And that selfishness has a certain outlet. And it's, some of it's wholesome, some of it's not wholesome. Anyway.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When we really try to acquire that higher spiritual strength to slay our lower propensities, that's where, you know, like, when we are not able to try to achieve, accomplish that higher spiritual strength, you know, that is the time, you know, like...
We're used to the material competitive paradigm. By that I mean, you're good, your parents tell their children, you're good, you can do it, you're smart, go and compete. Right? Get that grade, you can do it. Oh, you didn't get the grade? Shame on you, you got to study harder, and, you know, you can do it. It's just pumping up the kartaham ittimanyate paradigm. Compete, win, do better, keep going, you know, you're good. Completely false ego. And we're very heavily invested in all of that, because so much conditioning, not just this lifetime. So this is another paradigm. This is the bhakti paradigm, where we make some effort, but we're depending upon descending mercy. Yes? So there's the relief from what you call pressure. It's, you know, let go of the material competition paradigm, the doership paradigm. Make an effort, but not in the doership role, but in a loving. Let me extend this effort to please Krishna. And I it's insufficient. The material energy's got a strong grip on me. It's insufficient. So then that's nice. It's like the chanting exercise. I can't do this on my own. Krishna. So then one invites Krishna's help. That's bhakti. It's not just the effort, it's the relationship with Krishna part. The Krishna factor, I call it. On our own, Maya's got us in her grip. Depending upon Krishna adds to our effort. A whole lot. I mean, big time. So that's what we want to exercise, that, you know, depending upon Krishna muscle. And do it in a modest way, you know, in a sustainable way. Okay. Help? Yeah.
Can you comment about the quantity, the importance of quantity versus quality in chanting?
Both.
Because there's a lot, well, I understand that the ideal would be both, but there's quite a bit of pressure to increase the number of rounds. But what I find is, as I increase them, my quality deteriorates, and then I feel like I'm committing more offenses by the inattentiveness. And so I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Well, you're going to hear a reply from an incrementalist. I'm an incrementalist. So both quality and quantity are incremental. But from from what you're describing, without knowing all the details, it would help to know details, but without knowing all the details, chant with feeling will result in quantity. That's a short answer. It sounds like I'm saying, you know, quality is more important. But it's not what I'm saying. Chant with feeling and quantity will increase. That's a challenge, to chant with feeling, because our feelings are, you know, in other directions besides that. Stuff, subtle and gross. That's what's important. I have lots of feelings about those things. Okay. Yes.
Bharat, my question is, you know, the link then with Krishna, like
what?
The bringing the focus or attention to Krishna.
Okay.
When there is our attention goes to material misery, it's easy to access the mercy, the devotee association, or you know, when there is support. But when you go back to the routine, it's almost like back to square one. So I'm trying to understand, how do we get back the attention to Krishna or access the mercy?
I'll give a short answer. People like longer answers, but this one's going to be short. To go from unsteady to steady, anishtata to nishtha, one has to cross over anarjanavritti, eradication of unwanted things. So the best way to cross over the unwanted things is strive for bhajana kriya done nicely. Not the eradication of the, you know, put the horse before the cart. And then you can get to your destination better than put the cart before the horse. So the horse is chanting, hearing and chanting. So qualitatively, withdraw attention from what you are describing and practice it. Constant practice, again and again, and 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times, 10,000,000 times, withdraw attention from asat and place it upon sat. We're accustomed to it attached to asat. That's their disease. Withdraw from there, especially when performing your direct devotional activity. So included can be when you're doing arti for the dealings. Supposing your mind is all over the place when doing arti for the dealings. Not nice. You don't feel good. But that may happen, so withdraw. My dear mind, sit down. I'm doing arti now. we'll take care of you later. Like you might tell to a child or something. And then you attend to it, but on the strength of, with spiritual strength. And some degree of clarity, of consciousness. Otherwise we're dealing with, you know, pollution. A polluted mind and polluted intelligence trying to address our problems. And we, you know, the struggle's too much. Mamamaya durakya, mama eva yeva padyante. So it takes take the spiritual position, especially when performing your devotional practices. Krishna, Krishna. I'm going to end. You got something?
Yes.
Okay, quick.
That's very short. One is, you know, Yogamaya and the other one is...
What's the relationship?
Yes, sometimes it appears actually, you know, Radharani is subservient to Yogamaya because she... But we know theoretically that Yogamaya is actually expansion of it. What is the relationship?
Think of some pastime where Krishna is summoning Yogamaya. The one that comes to mind immediately is his giving some service to Yogamaya to transfer Balaram and then take birth and then be carried and then become Durga. That's not Radharani. Radharani is his pleasure potency, specifically. And Yogamaya has a different function. It's not so much one is subservient to the other or vice versa. It's just Krishna's Swarup Shakti having different aspects and features. Krishna's interacting with Radharani is different and with Yogamaya is different. All part of his Antaranga Shakti or Swarup Shakti. All according to Krishna's all-powerful will, they act. Mm-hmm. Although it may seem, in case of Radharani, she acts independently, mm-hmm. but it's not. It's loving. It's increasing the happiness of Krishna, however she acts. She may speak contrary, act contrary, etc. It's all for the pleasure of Krishna. That's Radharani. And Yogamaya is coordinating activities, you know, pastimes of Krishna through her agency. And she has her sub-agencies. So different functions of his internal potency. You have something?
Yes, ma'am. You were mentioning in the answer to one of the questions, like, when we are trying to set goals in devotional service and we have some things in mind, but in one way when we try and I'm like being too hard on myself, like I end up beating up myself and saying, oh, then I'm not able to do it. And then the advice I received was not to be too hard on myself, but then at the same time I get frustrated, like...
That's the solution. That frustration, we know from Bhagavad Gita what that is. Kamesha Krodesha. It's driven by the mode of passion. It's not wrong to have goals, but let those goals not be driven by passion. Is it possible to have a goal that's not driven by passion? When we're implicated in the modes of nature, one of which, very prominent of which is passion. Is it possible? So it's cultivation of bhakti to strive, which sounds like passion, but for the pleasure of Krishna, so that it diminishes or debilitates, cripples the influence of passion to some degree at least. So bhakti displaces the influence of the modes of nature. So what should we do? So think in bhakti terms with a spiritual conception or spiritual paradigm instead of the doership one. And so that means cultivate bhakti inwardly as we're making plans and executing the plans or striving to execute the plans. But then also make doable goals, realistic ones. like, you know, get up in the morning when the alarm goes off, or whatever it is that somebody is, you know, wishing to work on.
So the second part of the question was like, is that an indication that I'm not being honest with myself?
It's more of an indication of the mode of passion being too having too prevalent of an influence. Passion in the sense of endeavoring through the agency of false ego, as opposed to endeavoring in the mood of devotion depending upon Krishna to fulfill. It's not necessarily self, you know, self-deception or lacking self-honesty. It's the modes of nature working. And then, you know, chopping away at your enthusiasm by saying, oh, you blew it, you're no good. You know, the mode of ignorance is younger brother. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.